Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Good morning. Welcome to Quarter Bananas. Thanks for joining us today and on our program on Access Radio 106.1 FM. We are radio by and for queer, intersex, intersectional, lesbian, takatāpui, trans, NB, diverse, bisexual, ace and nanas, because some of us identify as nanas.
Of us have escaped nana duty to be here today.
We'd like to say a big thank you to the Rural Foundation, who's been our sponsor for Quarter Bananas. And the grant from the Peter Rule Fund has paid for our Access Radio time, allowing us to make our voices heard live and also via podcasts you can download later. And you can find out more about the Rule Foundation by visiting ruralfoundation.nz. In the studio, you have us, which is Sue and Fiona, and you just heard Sue escaping nanahood today.
Yeah.
But we have a special guest with us, which is Will Hansen, talking about his thesis that was recently accepted on queer activism in Aotearoa from 1961 to 2013. Welcome, Will.
Thank you so much for having me. I love Quilted Bananas.
Welcome, Dr. Will.
Or is it
Dr. Pending?
Dr. Pending. Not doctor until I've done my graduation ceremony.
Yeah.
Really? December,
yeah. You have to
wait. Oh, it's a very technical sort of stepping through, you know, from future Dr. Will to Dr. Pending Will to Dr. Will.
Really? Oh my goodness!
You've got to have, you know, had the gown and the diploma, mainly the diploma.
All right.
Exciting.
Well, anyway, Will is just fine.
There we go. So we're excited to have Will in the studio with, and Will's, as usual, we like to ask people what music they'd like us to play during the show, and Will's given us a couple of songs here, and we'd like to kick off with Ethel Kane with American Teenager.
Let's go out, but I'm still standing here.
And welcome back to Quarter Bananas. We're back with Dr. Will Hansen, or nearly Dr. Will Hansen.
I wrote Dr. this. Pending.
Dr. Pending Will Hansen.
So when you've passed,
yes,
but you haven't been through the graduation process, then it's Dr. Pending. So.
Right.
It's going to happen.
This is never going to happen to me. I'm never going to have Dr. Pending. So I'm taking this information in and out my ears. No. No, definitely not. So Will is also the trustee of Kawe Mahara Queer Archives Aotearoa. As I know, Will is an ex-librarian as well. and now you're writing a book based on your PhD thesis, Queer Activism in Aotearoa, New Zealand, 1961 to 2013. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Right. This is a mastermind, don't worry. I saw that you had in your honours thesis, in your master's thesis as well, you'd covered a similar ground, is that right? Or kind of like the PhD was kind of the culmination, right? So do you want to talk a little bit about that background and how you came to write the thesis?
Research, it kind of really started even when I was an undergrad in 2017. I was doing a New Zealand history paper, and it was the first time I'd done a New Zealand history paper, which was bad. I should have been doing more. But one of the options was to choose your own topic, and I was immediately like, this is the first opportunity I've had to research Aotearoa's trans histories. And my lecturer was really supportive, Rebecca Lenihan. She was really lovely. So I did this. You know, it was a 4,000-word essay, and my aim had been to cover New Zealand's trans history, as you do when you're, you know, in your third year at uni and you think you can do it all in 4,000 words. And so that quickly then was like, okay, I...
It's a bit bigger than this.
It's way bigger. So then I did my honours thesis, which was 10,000 words, I think, on... trans communities in Wellington in the 1970s. And then my master's thesis really built on top of that. I broadened it out nationwide and looking 1970s, 1980s. And obviously being transgender myself, trans history was what I was really passionate about. And I just felt like it was something I needed for me as well to feel... to understand these histories, and also knowing that there's not really anybody's written about it, so there's a real need for it, and that's something I can do that is helpful for my communities and try and give back in that way, I guess. But as I was doing the master's, I was kind of focusing on trans archives and trans stories, but I guess I already knew, but kind of reconfirming for myself that, you know, trans people live in community with other queer people. And if I wanted to understand trans stories better, I needed to understand queer stories better. And so when I was thinking, what do I do for my PhD, I kind of was flipping between, do I do an even more intensive trans history of New Zealand, which is still something I'd really love to do, or do I kind of... look more broadly at queer stuff, but focus on activism, because the activist histories for me is that really inspiring, you know, how learning how they fought back, so how we can fight back, and thinking about all the kind of trans exclusionary movements that there are and wanting to speak back to that. I thought that would actually be the track to go down that might be more powerful in that way of, you know. And the more I read, the more I was really realizing, yes, trans people have been in all of these communities all the time. Mm-hmm. They've been in all of these politics, and that even when trans people aren't there, if it's a trans exclusionary group, you still can't understand them without understanding trans communities, because that's what they're basing their politics off. Mm-hmm. So kind of wanting to explore all those intersections. And yeah, so that's kind of where the project goes from. Sorry if I blabbed.
No.
So are you telling really me great. That trans people haven't just appeared over the last over the last 4 or 5 years, according to this?
Absolutely, and that's what has always been so frustrating, and that's why I want to do this. Is, you know, yeah. it's trans people have been there the whole time.
But also, yeah, in the thesis you talk quite a lot about the word queer as well, which some people still find difficult. Personally, I really like the word queer, but also how queer kind of has encompassed a lot of different parts of the community, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, so I guess that's one of the things I really appreciated about dipping into the thesis. I admitted to Will just before we met, before the radio show, that I hadn't read the whole thing.
I don't have any expectation. It's just so lovely that you've even started to read. I think that's so lovely.
Oh, good. But there are so many tangents.
Did you start linearly? You started at the beginning.
And I did.
Yeah. Whereas I thought, oh, there's got to be some juicy bits in here. So I went searching for the juicy bits. Oh,
did you find?
I did find, yeah.
Well, actually, one of the really interesting things, and I know that this is a different than what I was going to say before, but the lovely story that you told about the group of people who throughout in the early 70s who went and pinned pink triangles up and down these lampposts.
Yeah.
And they thought, wow, this is basically going to hit the media and do really well. And then it turned out that because I know that the surname is Ings.
Yeah,
is
Welby Ings. Yeah.
Welby Ings. And had started in Waiuru. And because he had been in a kind of a security area, there was a media blackout and there was no mention of it anywhere, even though there were these pink triangles throughout the country, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that story was so beautiful. So Welby's a professor of design at AUT at the moment.
Oh, wow.
And he was so generous with his time. He's just the loveliest man ever. And I did many, many hours of interviews with him. He told me all sorts of stories, and that one really struck with me because it was this, you know, beautiful idea that him and his comrades throughout the country were going to hang these pink triangles up on flagposts throughout the country, and they'd design these media packs and they'd planned out their route so carefully. And then, you know, he was telling me about the fear that it was just him and one friend who had Waiuru to Wellington, and then there were other couples doing other parts of the islands, watching curtains twitch as people were peeking out the window to see these two guys getting the flags up, and the police actually talked to them a few times while they were doing that, and they kind of hurriedly putting the pink triangles behind their back and just pretending to be drunk, or, you know, one time he just pretended to be a drunk student and the police officer let him off. So just kind of racing down the country in the middle of the night, finally getting to Wellington and crashing in bed, and then in the morning, a police officer came knocking on the door, and the friend that Welby had done it with, Welby was living in Taihape, so he was staying with the friend who lived in Wellington. The police officers were saying, oh, you know, we've had reports of you and someone else getting up to trouble, and this guy was like, oh, no, I just picked someone random up and hitchhiker, and he's at the ferry already. And but because they all had... they knew they were all being surveilled by the police and that their phones were all being tapped, they couldn't call anybody to see if they'd done their parts. And they're thinking, well, we're going to wake up and the whole country's going to be covered in news of these pink triangles everywhere, and there's nothing. And they were thinking, oh, my God. But because Welby was based in Taihape and he had organised the group Gay Rights of Taihape, which was basically just him.
And it's great,
It's so
Gay Rights of Taihape.
Gay Rights of Taihape.
That's the kind of thing that, you know, the kind of organisation you can do, you know, it's me.
I mean, it's incredible that he did all that work by himself, and then because he was in Taihape, all the queers at the military base in Waiuru would come and visit him, because they needed someone to talk to about being queer and, you know, feeling isolated and all those things. And one of those men at the military base told him a couple months later, oh, because the first place he went to was the military museum in Waiuru, the military issued this nationwide media ban. So he didn't even find out until months later why there hadn't been any news. Hmm. And the only coverage that I've been able to find, at least, was in the Pink Triangle newspaper.
And I guess that's the thing with the thesis, is that you can dip in and find things like that, stories like that, which are amazing, but also so many different, as you say, kind of intersections and tangents of of, use of the word queer, but also the conflict, I know, within the groups that you talked about between liberalism and... what's the other word?
Radicalism.
Sorry. Yeah, and that kind of tension between kind of working within and without, I guess. Yeah. So, yeah. No, really, really fascinating.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, did you?
Yeah, it's I think one of the bits that I went looking for that I'd had a sort of long chat once with a trans woman about, I think, about my age. Who had also come out of the military, who'd come out very quite late, who talked about having no elders, that there were no elders in that, you know, of her age in that community, which I thought was a really, you know, you're sort of like, oh my gosh, yeah. And then you see it again in your thesis. We've got the same story with the gay community around sort of that they'd lost their elders through the AIDS crisis and those kind of impacts that you know you don't necessarily see because it's not here anymore which is kind of the lesbian community hasn't had that kind of thing, which I'm not sure is necessarily always been a good thing, but but yeah, I thought that was one of the bits that I went looking to, and also the as I was reading, I think, you know, is how it's changed. Mm. So it was very specific issues that they were going after in some areas, like the it's probably more a liberalism kind of thing going after the marriage stuff. Do you see because I didn't read the whole thing, do you see a sort of shift in what that activism looks like over that? It's quite a long period, isn't it? It's about, just a 50-year period. Do you have a sense of what that activism shift has looked like over that period?
Yeah, I mean, that's such a good question, and it's there's so many different shifts in so many different ways, and then also so many things that stay the same. And I think that, I guess, I didn't want to be too kind of black and white about things, but just to give a bit of a framework to what I was exploring in the archives, thinking about liberalism and radicalism as these two strands of politics that have not always been in conflict with each other or anything or mutually exclusive, but which I think are the kind of dominant ways of informing how queer people have gone about agitating for greater freedom and what that freedom looks like and what methods they're using. And I found that when we start getting these organized groups in the 1970s, these early 1970s groups are very much talking about revolution and sexual liberation and pride and subverting all these, heterosexist ideas and really radical stuff. But that even from the beginnings of those groups, there were people who were saying, I don't think we should be too radical. I think we need to be careful about our image. We need to be reaching out to people who are closeted who might feel afraid to come and join us if we're being too out there, and we need to reach out to the average Joe, and we need to reach out to parliamentarians, and that's how we get that vote. And then, you know, other people saying, well, but do we even want to go through parliament? Can we get any meaningful change from parliament? You know, maybe that's if we start going down that route, are we then censoring ourselves and making ourselves more exclusive and cutting out those from our communities who need our support the most? And that kind of those kinds of conversations and tensions happening all the way throughout. But definitely, I felt like liberalism became a really dominant strategy from the mid 70s, really, all the way through until I would say probably very recently. I think that most activists, the majority of activist groups were focusing on that kind of law reform and legal change, and that's all really important, really good stuff. So I'm not disparaging it in any way, but that I think that that has been the majority. And then there have been radical groups and radical people who've been pushing for different views and or a longer vision or different kinds of change. And then I kind of feel that marriage equality was really a bit of a turning point in queer activism, because after that, then we see all these other groups start to emerge, even gender minorities, Aotearoa, and I know that they've got anarchist influences and they're thinking about mutual aid and all of these kinds of things. And then there's, you know, groups like Queer Endurance and Defiance, which started 2021, I think, 2020, or 2019 even maybe.
Might be a bit before then.
I think before COVID, actually, you're right. So these new kind of groups coming up that are very much, again, thinking about liberation and thinking about these kind of radical methods of protest. But so I think that's kind of what seems to dominate now in terms of grassroots.
Do you think that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'm just curious, is that, and I know that you, your thesis goes to 2013 because of the same-sex marriage being agreed. And so do you think that there was a group, you know, quite a lot of people who basically that was their aim? And I know internationally as well there was this tension between people saying, I want to be able to get married, and others saying, but yeah, but hang on a minute, there's all these other things that need to change too, right? Yeah. And so do you think that the at that point there were some people who kind of just got married and then kind of just went back to their lives rather than kind of being continuing to be activists?
Or
were activists in different ways, I guess? Yeah,
I think activists in different ways, but definitely I think there were people who that was their main goal, and I certainly read in the archives lots of people very explicitly saying that, and that once we had marriage there'd be nothing more to fight for. And that's where I found groups like the Queer Avengers so interesting, because they, you know, in the early 2010s, there were writings from members of the Queer Avengers who were saying, you know, we don't think that marriage is an important goal for us, that actually that we've got bigger goals or different goals, that, you know, there are all sorts of issues we could talk about with marriage as a goal. But then when the marriage equality movement here really gets going, Queer Avengers are starting to think, okay, actually, we want to support everybody in their campaigns for rights, because everybody should have equal rights. So we're going to support this, but we're doing so as one step towards something greater rather than seeing it as the end goal. And it was so interesting talking to people who were part of Queer Avengers who, you know, had conflicts with other people in the marriage equality movement who were telling them to tone it down or asking them not to speak about things like polyamory or trans marriage or those kinds of things. But that they were really steadfast in saying, well, no, we're going to be ourselves and talk openly about our political desires. And, you know, that group is very influenced by communism and Marxism and thinking about what liberation looks like for all of us, and what sexual and gender liberation looks like, and you know, tied in with anti-capitalism and decolonization and things like that, and seeing marriage equality as a part of it. But anyway, sorry, I probably blabbered too much.
No, you've
done something dangerous by giving me a microphone and asking me to talk about my thesis.
I found that really interesting because it kind of really kind of built on what I asked. So that was great. Yeah. And I know that you also kind of mentioned as well that a lot of the archives also it was from a very Pākehā perspective as well, and finding other truths from kind of Takatāpui and Pasifika people and others as well, right? And so the difficulty of bringing that view in too, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. And that's something that going forward is a real big focus of mine as well. And you know, I was really chuffed I got to interview Elizabeth Kirikiri, Dr. Elizabeth Kirikiri, about her experiences, and she talks about being part of Wahine Mona Wahine, also known as the Black Dykes, who were a collective in the 1980s of Māori Pacifica and some Indian women. And they were such an incredible group, and the more I read about them and the more I learned about them, the more I realised they had such a huge impact on queer organising, on lesbian organising in particular, in the 80s and early 90s, and yet there's not really that much information out there about them. And I talked to so many other people who were inspired by them. And so, yeah, just kind of wanting to really honour those Takatapui groups and Takatapui individuals who have been so instrumental. And even, you know, thinking outside of organising, but more broadly thinking about our queer defiance and resistance, people like Carmen Rupe, Chrissy Witoko, who absolute groundbreaking figures. But I think sometimes when we do focus on organizations, we miss those kinds of figures who weren't doing things like marching down to Parliament with protest signs, but were creating these spaces and being loud and visible. And yeah.
So was that sort of post-colonialism theme running back in Elizabeth, you know, in that group's thing, or did some of the current thinking gel from that? So I think Takatapui as a term came out of Elizabeth Kerikeri's work and looking back. So has that been a newish thing, or has that been there all the time?
So Elizabeth told me she first heard the word Takatapui in the late 1980s from Nahuya Tawakutuku's research. And Nahuya was presenting it to Wahine Mona Wahine at one of their annual hui. And that's when she first learned about it. And around the same time, some of the kind of more gay men's AIDS activist collectives were also thinking about the word Takatapui and discovering it for the first time. And so I think that kind of late 1980s, early 1990s period is when that word is really beginning to be reclaimed. But certainly Wahine Mona Wahine, the stuff that they did was very much, you know, without having the word Takatapui, it was a Takatapui politics, and it was all about what does colonization mean when we're thinking about sexual oppression? What does decolonization mean when we're thinking about sexual liberation? How do all these threads intertwine? Very much a Māori nationalist group, and as the group developed, they also became really focused on upskilling their members in the reo Māori and understanding more about te ao Māori. So it was, they were kind of straddling all these different movements and really pushing their Pākehā comrades to understand more about what it meant, what racism means in these queer spaces. And there's these amazing transcripts of speeches that members of Wahine Mona Wahine gave at homosexual law reform protests, where they're saying, you know, I see all of you Pākehā queers here for homosexual law reform, but why have I never seen any of you at, you know, a march for the Māori language or a march for Māori land rights? You know, why are you not showing up for these different issues? Our opponents are constantly slagging off queers and they're slagging off Māori and they're making those connections. Why aren't we making those connections? Which I thought was so powerful.
Yeah.
So, yeah, all these kinds of cool things that they were doing.
So that's because there's a story in there about when they did do that, and it didn't necessarily go well. So I thought that's an interesting story about making that inroads into that other activism, the Murray Land stuff.
Yeah, because I definitely just wanting to, when I was researching, thinking about how has racism influenced queer activism, and absolutely it has, and a lot of these white-dominated groups, it's a major problem, but something that's not necessarily on top of the archives. Like, it's something that's kind of you read into, I suppose, and that only comes out really when you're talking to people more. And
it really showcases the, you know, the absolute necessity of kind of this oral history, retaining these oral histories, and interviewing people before they're gone, right? Basically, to kind of uncover this so that it can be kept at Kawe Mahara, right?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Wow.
It was so, I just had the best time interviewing everybody, and everybody was so, so generous. And, you know, I had people, I had one woman drive with me. She drove us 2 hours to her friend's house so that I could interview both of them. And then her friend made me lunch, and they both wanted to be anonymous because they're both not out as trans to many people in their lives. But, you know, that was such a huge mission that she took us all that way, because I'm one of those horrible gays who doesn't have their driver's license, but she took us. And, you know, people spending hours and hours speaking with me. I had one interviewee who wanted to keep speaking so much, but it was midwinter and she was a bit cold, and she was like, do you mind if I just get in bed while we're doing this interview? And so she lay in bed with the covers all the way up to her chin, and her room was quite small, so I had a chair kind of half out the door, half in the room, at the foot of the bed, and my recording device sitting on the bed, and she just adopted a little kitten who she put on the end of the bed and gave some cat food down the end of the bed. Oh, so right. In the background of the recording,
munch,
you just
munch,
hear this
munch.
And, and purring as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, from this little kitten, you know. And but we were talking for hours and hours and hours, and I was just, you know, it was just such a sweet and funny setup, and she was laughing about it too, you know. But she was just so eager to speak. So anyway, it was just a real privilege to get the opportunity to be with people and hear all those stories. And
so I guess, as you know, we both work for the library. Well, I do still work for the library. But I guess, you know, databases like the Archives of Gender and Sexuality. And, you know, the interesting thing for me is that, you know, the Canadian archives on there have, you know, digital copies of early material from here. And I'm looking through your thesis, kind of thinking about, you know, in terms of those conflicts or kind of realizations that were being made between these different movements, I guess, did that kind of reflect as well with the international side of things as well? Is that these same debates were happening worldwide? Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. And I found a lot of international literature was so helpful when I was researching my work. And yeah, absolutely. All these debates that were happening, I think, all over the kind of Western, especially places that are colonized, like the United States, like Australia. Yeah, all these debates are happening everywhere, and that was something really cool. I really enjoyed Emily Hobson's book Lavender and Red, and she talks a lot about internationalism and queer activism, which I hadn't actually heard of before I started studying. But, you know, the idea that working class people all over the world have more in common with each other than, you know, we do with our oppressors in our own countries. And so I started thinking more about that and what that means in these contexts. And certainly Waking Them on Na Waking, they were embodying that. And they went to Australia and they participated in these protests with Indigenous lesbian Australians and showing solidarity with each other. And so all of these connections are happening for sure. Yeah,
and the Two-Spirit communities, I guess, in the US and in North America, right, as well.
Totally.
So, hey, I think, should we have some music? Yeah. So Marlon Williams, yeah?
I love Marlon Williams. His songs are beautiful.
Cool. Oh, hang on a second. This is what happens when you're co-hosting and doing tech at the same time.
I think having seen Marlon Williams, there's not often that I look at somebody, you know, that you're seeing them for the first time and you think, holy, this performer is just something. So I think I'd agree on Marlon Williams.
Tera, mo te tera, te wahi kai ai tai ohi na hua o te koreke. Tera, mo te tera, he ahuru mo te hunga maruru o nua. Tera, mo te tera, ma poti ana ke iki ki kora. Te hākina kina ki reira.
wa ueki karui ae te poho o tamatea. Ua ua ki ka kite ia tamatea perae. Tera, tihi tera, he tirohanga huri noa whakaaroaro. Tera, tihi tera, te wai whai a whina ke a tamatea. Tera, tihi tera, ko hatu whakareka reka e. Tera, tihi tera, ka awhinati pera ti ahau. Me, me ua ua ki. Karui ae te poho o tamatea. Me, me ua ua ki, ka kite ia tamatea perae.
And that was Marlon Williams. And would you like to pronounce the name of the track, Will?
I believe it's Me Ua Ua Ke.
Thank you. and yes, so we are here with Dr. Pending, Will Hansen. And so just talking in the studio this morning. And yeah. So, and we've gone into a lot of different areas, I think, haven't we?
Yeah, well, yeah. That's the thesis. So the thesis is available online through through Vic's service, and maybe we could put up a link for it so that people can go and have a look at it. It's packed with with interesting stories that are within the range of the with the thesis. I never actually thought, you know, that international one is just kind of got me thinking, is, you know, because that's always been there in the left wing, you know, from the internationals well over 100 years ago. But actually seeing the right wing is really appropriating a lot of those sort of methods and approaches of the left wing, that the right wing movement is now using those same sort of strengths against queer communities is quite an interesting, I hadn't actually sort of thought of that as being part of the sort of scope of what's happened. I was interested in the methodology that you've used, because I'm not that familiar with history methodology. So some of it you've done from interviews, and quite a large number of interviews. That would be a number of interviews that a qualitative thesis would use anyway, and, you know, get quite a meaty thesis out of it. But an extensive bibliography there as well.
Oh, thank you.
And your association with that has been quite a long history of that association with the queer history and the gathering of that. So, do you want to give us a bit of a rundown of your time and work in what was the archive. Well, it is still the archive of that work.
Yeah, so Kawe Mahara Queer Archives Aotearoa, we were, until quite recently, the Lesbian Gay Archives of New Zealand, Te Piranga Takatapui o Aotearoa. We changed our name a couple of years ago because we were having loads of conversations around, you know, we contain so much more than just lesbian and gay archives. And, you know, as a trans person, I felt it was important that we acknowledge that in our name. And I also had so many conversations, especially with younger people who weren't sure if it was a safe space for them, didn't want to donate their archives to us because they felt like we didn't represent them. And so, you know, we had just so many conversations over the years, and we came to a unanimous decision in the end on the board after doing a public survey. I can't remember how many people answered that. I think it was about 300, which was pretty good for a group that's never done a survey before. So, well, at least not in the last 10, 20 years. So, Kawe Mahara kind of roughly translates to carrying memories, and that kind of came from a quote from Nahuia Tawakotuku, who speaks about the importance of history as a way of carrying memories, that I thought was really beautiful. That's the archives that we collect and preserve and make available for research, queer, taonga, and archives from individuals and organisations across Aotearoa and the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so just thinking about your thesis and people dipping into it, and yeah, we will put a link up, but I guess I know that you're actually in the process or going to soon be in the process of turning it into a book. Is that right? Do you want to kind of tell how you're kind of approaching that?
Yeah, thank you. I'm so excited. So the Judith Binney Trust have given me a writing award, which is amazing. So basically that's to support me spending a year just working on turning the thesis into a book, which is a dream come true to have that time and that space to do that. So I'm approaching publishers. So the etiquette is that you approach one publisher at a time. So I've sent my first proposal off. I'm waiting to hear back. And in the meantime, just kind of looking at my thesis and, you know, kind of taking out the more academic-y bits. But I didn't really, it's not a super academic thesis. I kind of, when I was writing it, even as a thesis, I was trying to, you know, this is about people's stories and this is something that I want to be useful for my communities. And if I can't turn it into a book, then I want it to still be something that's useful. So as much as I could within the constraints of, you know, writing an academic, you know, something for examination. I wanted to make it colourful and exciting. But just trying to really bring that out even more. And there were so many things I couldn't include because of word count restrictions. And I'm probably going to have to restrict the word count way more, but I'm still at the moment before I've got any kind of rigid things in place. I'm throwing in left, right and centre all these other stories that I thought were so beautiful that I just had to cut out for space. So, doing all of that. And I want to do more interviews and get more perspectives that I didn't get a chance to understand more about. That's what I'm...
I actually think with the colour in some of those stories it would almost do with a sort of, you know, zines kind of, you know, these stories, or with the, you know, with a graphic representation as well, because, you know, it's already a long thing, and to bring it into a book is a challenge anyway, and stuff's going to have to be in and out, you know, and there's so much in there.
So it could have a long life as a book and other parts, I guess, as well.
Yeah.
And I guess this is a plug as well, and talking about interviews and things like that. I guess I know on the 31st of July you're going to be at Newtown Library, is that right?
Sorry. Yes, I am. No, that's good.
With Gareth Watkin and Karen Pollock from Heritage New Zealand. And is it Heritage
New Zealand? Yes, from Heritage New Zealand, yeah. And Leilani Sia.
Leilani, yeah. Who's obviously part of our Collective and does the Royal Fish Show, so that's very cool. And so Leilani is hosting, I think, right? So in Newtown, I think it's at 6 o'clock on the 31st, Thursday the 31st. Yeah.
I'm really
hoping it's going to be recorded because, in fact, I've already made inquiries because it's actually the first night back of our semester for Glamophones. So, yeah, so I really want to be there, but I have to go somewhere else. So, yeah, but I think it will
be. So that's the because it's a Queer History Month at the moment. Mm.
Yeah.
So that's like the ultimate.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the last event.
But in fact, starting from the beginning of the month, you have two, I know, at least events this week, right?
Yeah.
Is that Tuesday and Wednesday?
Yeah, Tuesday and Wednesday.
So, yeah, I've already signed up for at least one of them. So do you want to tell listeners what's going on?
Thanks, Fiona. So there's a whole bunch of stuff happening for Queer History Month. On Tuesday, I'm giving a talk at the Alexander Turnbull Library, mm-hmm. The National Library, organised by the Friends of the Turnbull, which I'm super grateful to be invited to do that. So I'm going to be talking mostly about trans activism within the gay liberation movement, and that'll be that talk. And then on Wednesday, Kawe Mahara is having our first Queer History Month quiz. That'll be super fun. We've never done a quiz before, but I've come up with a lot of the questions, and my colleague Laurie has come up with some of them as well. So we, you know, that the aim of that is really as a fun way for people to learn about queer history. So, you know, you don't get to hear about this in high school. You don't get to hear about it in the media that much, you know. So I don't want people to feel, oh, I don't know stuff about queer history. I can't come to this quiz because it's supposed to just be fun learning. But there are going to be prizes.
Ooh.
So, you know, there will be winners and losers.
Well, there'll be winners.
There'll be winners.
No one's going to lose.
No. Well, even the very last team will probably get something. So
yeah, but no matter what, you're going to learn something, right?
Exactly.
From the answers of the questions. And I guess that's the thing, is that that's what's really beautiful about Queer History Month, is that, as you've identified, there's so much of our history that's still to be uncovered, right? So, it's really great. And so do you have other events happening this month as well?
Yeah, there's a bunch of things on. I'm doing another talk in New Plymouth with the Govett Brewster Gallery, which was really nice of them to invite me. So that's, that's on the 15th of July. And then I know that my friend Jen Shields in Christchurch is organising a couple of events, but I don't know if they've got them finalised yet, but they're coming. And I know that Wellington Pride is organising something else again that I don't think that it's been totally confirmed, but there's something else coming from there.
Did you go to Cabaret the other night?
No, I didn't. I really wanted to.
I didn't go either, but I know it probably went off really well.
Oh,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
It looked really cool.
Yeah.
And then the Charlotte Museum in Auckland are doing a couple of events. They've already done a clay night, which people were creating clay sculptures and thinking about history and how they want to be remembered in history. And then they've also got an amazing race that's being planned with a radical movement up in Auckland. So if you're in Tamaki Makaurau, you should check that out. And it's an amazing race, like scavenger hunt about history, which sounds so cool. And then, of course, Gareth Watkins and Roger Smith. Wait, is that Roger? That's Roger Smith's last name. Sorry, Roger Smith, if you... I think it's last name Smith. Anyway, Gareth and Roger. Mm-hmm. Organising. They've got podcasts coming out every week and they've got a walk tour.
I hadn't realised they'd done so many of those walk tours. It's extraordinary.
Yeah, they've probably done like 100 or so by now.
It was. Oh.
They're so cool.
Yeah, and I think they're doing a thing on doing those, you know, doing those.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and they've got. Yeah, they're doing something about how they do those tours and upskilling people. I think that's part of the podcast, and I think it's also another speaking event. Oh, I'm terrible. I should have had a piece of paper printed out with all these dates and things, but I think those are the main events. So there's all sorts of things happening.
And to find out more, they should look on the Kawe Mahara Facebook page?
Yes, look on the Kawe Mahara Facebook page or Instagram, mm-hmm. Which is both just Kawe Mahara, Kawe. And then Mahara.
Cool. Hey, we've got one more song, and then we'll have about three more minutes to go. So the next song is Nueva Ola. Nueva, Nuevo, yes?
I think so. I'm not sure. I don't understand a lot of it, but it's beautiful. Bad Bunny, I only just recently came across him and he's so cool.
Very cool.
Nueva York! ¿Quieres divertir? Otra vez lo sacamos al estadio.
Tiene piquete, mami, yo también. Tú estás buena, yo estoy bueno también. Huelo rico y ando con los de 100. Si tú lo quieres, lo tienes que mover. Tú tienes piquete, mami, yo también. Tú estás buena, yo estoy bueno también. Huelo rico y ando con los de 100. Si tú lo quieres, lo tienes que mover. Lo tienes que mover. Lo tienes que mover. Lo tienes que mover. Lo tienes que mover.
And that was Nuevo from Bad Bunny, which was a choice from Will Hansen, who we've had in the studio this morning talking about his thesis. Oh, my goodness. I think that might have been Ethel Kane just coming back on just momentarily.
We didn't hear that, but...
Oh, good. I heard it.
It didn't mean the audience didn't hear it.
Just very briefly. It was the very first bar, basically, of American Teenager, which was we did play first in the show. And you're listening to Quarter Bananas 106.1 FM. And we have 2 minutes and 38 seconds to go. But it's just been a real joy talking to you, Will, today. And we've really enjoyed it. And I guess in the break, you were talking a little bit about Bad Bunny and what you learned about Bad Bunny, I guess, and learning about the album, right?
Yeah, and just that it's about colonization in Puerto Rico and gentrification, and that he uses historical or, I guess, traditional Puerto Rican influences in his music. Mm-hmm. I don't know a heap about it, but he's like one of the most famous artists in the world. And I was like, how have I not heard of him before? I guess I'm just a bit out of the loop, too much time in the archives. But he's so cool. So
yeah. No, it's very cool. So just thinking back to, so we've got Queer History Month happening this month. And in terms of Kawe Mahara, I know that you do have workshops as well happening every now and then, yeah, that people can join in?
Absolutely. And if you want to learn more, we're still working on our new website. So go to our old website, which is Lagans.com. Org.nz or
.org.
Good thing you know. So that's L-A-G-A-N-Z, Lagans, .org.nz, and we've got all our updates there, or our Facebook and Instagram. We share things there too. But yeah, thank you so much for having me. You just know that I just love Quilted Bananas. I love everything you guys do.
Aww.
And when you guys came out with the name change, Quilted Bananas, that changed my whole world. That was the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, we thought it was pretty cool too.
Yeah.
It was such a powerful thing to do, and I just really love all the
kaupapa,
for
our current
kaupapa. There's a story around it, and I don't know that we've ever quite captured it.
No, and in the 47 seconds.
Yeah, we'll just tell that whole story now.
Well, I think we need to flip the radio around sometimes. You guys need to be interviewed.
Well, it's been lovely having you, Will, and it's such a lovely piece of work, so important for the communities.
Yeah, and we'll look forward to seeing the book when it comes out. I know that the book will come out, definitely, because it's so important for both people now to read about what happened in the past, but also for future generations as well. So thank you so much for all the work you did. Yeah,
thank you. That means so much to me. Thank you.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.